So next up, we have Gabe Becker, who's going to be talking about VizTracker, tracking and discovering plots via automatic semantic.
All right, so thanks, Hillary. As she said, I'm going to be talking about discoverability, although since the submission of the abstract, it's actually gotten a little broader, so I'm going to talk about discovery of results in general rather than only plots, although plots will be a substantial focus of this talk. And I should say that this is an extension and continuation of work that a summer intern, Sarah Moore, did with me, and it's also joint with Michael Lawrence. So let's start off at the very beginning. You have some sort of awesome result that you've worked really hard to generate, and that is great, right? Because if science doesn't go forward, if you don't have good results, then we don't really care about discoverability, we don't care about reproducibility unless the thing is actually good in the first place, right? But once you have this great result, now I have two questions for you. One people are asking pretty frequently these days, and the second one I would argue they're asking less so. So first off, is it reproducible? So can I come along and recreate your result? Can you, in a year, come back and recreate your result? And it turns out, as many people in this room probably already know, that's harder than it sounds, and there are a lot of people working on that. And that's going to be sort of tangential to what I'm talking about here, but not the main focus. And so the second question that I'm going to ask you is, how are people going to find this result of yours? And by people, I mean, how are your collaborators going to get their hands on it right now so that they can continue this collaboration with you? How are you going to find it in a year when you're writing your manuscript after all the work is done? And just as a joke, you know, how are people going to find it when they're studying the state of science a million years from now? I'm not going to help you with the third one, but I am going to talk quite a bit about the first two. Before that, though, I am going to do a live demo, which hopefully will work because it I finished it yesterday. So if you students in the room, if you take one thing from this talk, it should be don't prepare your talks like Gabe does. But if you take two, I hope the second one is about reproducibility. So up here we have some R code. It's just making a very simple plot with qplot from ggplot. So we're going to run that. And then suppose I need to share this with my collaborators on this super important car analysis that I'm apparently doing, then what I'm going to do is instead of saving it and then emailing it to someone, I'm going to record this plot, and what I'm going to talk more about what that exactly means later in the talk, but basically what this means is store this in a place and annotate it with a bunch of information that I can use to find it again. And so we're just going to run that here. And it's going to take a little while because it's computing some things. But then what I can actually do is I can give my collaborators this RSS feed URL. And if we reload, we can see now my super awesome car plot is on there. And so they can actually just watch that and be up to date with whatever results are coming out of this project. And this is a way, and like this is more or less permanent in the database, so like they're not going to lose the email or it's not going to be deleted somehow. But of course this is a graphics talk and it's a super lame plot, so let me see if I can find one that's slightly better. So this is a black light. It sits on top of a solar database, and so at some point I made a plot with carats versus price, and I did some smoothing. And let's see what we got. Our diamond, probably diamonds. So you can see here, okay, so this plot's a little bit better, so we'll click on this. But of course, this is not a talk about how to make a search engine that can find images. Google has that pretty much covered at this point. So what we're actually going to do is we're going to grab this out of the database that sits. Well, this is why you don't do live demos. But what should happen? Yeah. Okay, sorry. I guess the solar core is unhappy with me for some reason. But what would happen normally is that we would grab this result out, and then in that database is actually the code that generated the plot in addition to the plot itself. And so you can actually grab the code and pull it out and evaluate it, and then we would have gotten the plot back. And I apologize that that did not work as well as it should have. But now let's talk about why you would want something like that and what's going on here. So first off, a definition of discoverability. So discoverability is the ability to discover the existence of, locate, and retrieve in a useful form some sort of artifact, whether it be a model fit or a plot or even just numerical summaries or data sets where you have subsetted or filtered in some meaningful way. And how do we discover things now? Well, mostly Google, right? So you have you need to find a figure that's in a paper, or you need to find the paper, or you have the paper and you need to find a table from it. Google is your friend. There's things like PubMed, there's things like Figshare, which do a lot of this type of thing. And of course, the backup is always you email the authors or you dig around on your hard drive if it's your own figure. But that doesn't work particularly well. And so, how can we make this better? Well, it's all about the annotations. It's all about the metadata that we have associated with these things. And this is not something that, you know, I discovered. Like, Figshare has known this for a really long time. It's actually in their FAQ. One of the questions is, how discoverable is my research? Are people going to be able to find it? And their answer, paraphrased, is, well, it depends on what you annotate it with. Like, how did you describe it when you put it in here? Because that's how people are going to be able to get it back out. Now, where does metadata come from? Well, ideally, it would come from you when you're making the plot or the model. But that's tedious, and none of you are going to actually do it. So instead of that, we're actually going to automatically generate the metadata so that we can annotate these plots and these model fits without having to worry about, you know, writing custom tags and sticking them on there. And so there are four sources of metadata that are going to be useful in the context that we're in. And the first is the computing environment, so the R session that you're in our case. The second is the object itself. The third is the script or code that you are using to generate the object. And the fourth is going to be the data that was used as an input to your script. And so the computing environment is going to tell us who made the object, when was it made, and what packages were loaded, the things like that, what version of R, basically anything that's in the session info. The object is going to tell us everything if we're sort of thorough enough, because the object is actually the object. It has 100% of the information about the object in it. But we're not going to do serialization like that. But there are a lot of sort of high-level things in R that you can do to query an object, like what are its names, what's its length, what are the classes of the columns of this data frame, what are the levels on this factor that I have, things like that. And so we're going to store all of those. Third is, of course, the code. The code is a perfect set of instructions to make the object, and we know that because the code is actually what made the object in the first place. It's what the computer actually did. It's how you told it what to do. But beyond the low-level stuff, code is often going to give us strong hints about like what the analyst was doing, why they were doing these things, what assumptions they were making, what questions they were trying to answer. And finally, the data. This is more or less self-explanatory. What is the data that you're analyzing? Did you subset it in some meaningful way? If so, what is that? What transformations were applied and things like that. Now, because this is the graphics session, I'm going to talk more about plots, which is we're going to go a little farther than what I've just described in the case of plots. So when you're going to make a plot, and hopefully it will look better than this one, you start with a question and some data, and then you go to your plot design. What kind of plot will answer my question? And then you go to coding. And if you're using ggplot2, you're going to come up with the grammar of graphics, like the sort of sentence of plotting verbs that will give you the plot. And then at the end, you get your plot. But if we flip this on its head a bit, if you give me a plot, I can tell you quite a bit about what you were thinking and what you were trying to do when you were making this plot. And just to illustrate this, I'm going to go through some examples relatively quickly. So I think everyone in the room knows what these plots are trying to do, right? This is an exploration of the distribution of a single variable, right? It's very obvious based on the left, based on the function that you called, actually in both cases, because these are race graphics. But also just based on just looking at that. So here's a scatter plot. This very clearly is an exploration of the relationship between two variables, right? Are they related to each other? Yes, they are. When one increases, the other seems to increase. So that, again, it's very clear what is happening here if you just sort of think about what the plot is doing. And then here, these are slightly more complicated plots, but these are also the structure of the plot is very informative. And so these are looking for interactions. Does the relationship between carrot and price depend on clarity? And the answer is a little in some cases. And then on the right, it's faceted by color. I should say this is the diamonds data set. And so you can see the analyst here is exploring interactions, higher order terms within a model, and if we were in a more modeling framework. And so what we're going to do, what I'm going to propose, is that in the case of plots, we can reverse what I had up earlier, which is we can take a plot or a vague memory of something that you plotted 6 months ago, or a plot that you have in front of you in a paper, or even a question that you remember answering in your analysis. And we can work backwards. So we can go from that to what was the plot design? And then we can go to the code or the grammar. And then using that code or grammar, we can actually select the plot out of a list of lots of plots, many of which are going to be unrelated. And so we're going to do this by annotating these plots with the metadata that describes the types of observations that we were having when we went through. So in case of ggplot, what geomes were used, what stats were used. Like, this tells you what type of plot it is, and which in turn is going to tell you the types of things that are being answered. And then what variables, whether there's conditioning, all of this type of thing. So that's enough of the sort of hand-wavy theory. So what does it actually do? What Recorder is going to do is it's going to store things that you make in your R session in a way that is automatically annotated, it's searchable, and it's retrievable. And it's going to be retrievable both the object and the code. And that you would have seen that if the live demo had actually worked. And it's going to automatically generate these low-level semantic annotations so that you don't have to say, oh, and this is a histogram. It can tell that it's a histogram because you use geome histogram, right? And it's going to summarize the objects. And so how do you use it? It's basically the same. It's basically a drop-in replacement for a function like save. So you load the package. As you load the package, it's going to start recording all of the code that you run in your R session. So all the objects are going to have a full historical script of how they were generated without you having to do anything. And then you go down, you're done, you made this object called myplot, and then you just record myplot, and then it will be in the database. You could be able to search for it. And yeah, like I said, the code tracking happens automatically. You can also have automatic recording. In the plotting case, you probably don't want to, because you don't want to see your collaborators to see the 17 versions of a plot you where you were fiddling with colors and stuff. But you can do that if you want. And then once they're in the database, you can have a web front end like we saw, but you can also have you can search for them from R. And just finally, why would you want to do this? So for collaboration, in terms of delivering plots, delivering results to a remote collaborator, this is nice because it's sort of permanent searchable record of what you're doing and what you're sharing. You can have this web front end, which is nice. You can have the RSS feed, which is useful in some contexts. You have automatic annotations, so Plotly, last time I checked at least, and Figshare both support tagging things that are submitted to it, but neither of them actually automatically generate very much information when you do the submission. And so this could work hand in hand with those in order to make your work that you submit more discoverable. If you're in a large research group, you want to know if someone else has already done the thing that you are thinking about doing, so you can search through their research to see maybe I should just collaborate instead of reinventing the wheel, and vice versa. You can publish your stuff so that other people can find you. And finally, I'll leave you with what is perhaps the most salient to most people, which is you can use it so you don't have to organize things yourself, right? So you don't have to remember what file name you gave to the fifth plot out of the 20 that you made in an analysis. You can just search for it at the end of the day and be able to find it with its code, with, you know, other things that are related to it. And finally, I'll just acknowledge, as I said, my intern, Sarah, who did a lot of work towards this, and is joint with Michael Lawrence as well. And I also do want to be upfront about the fact that this is fairly similar to BHX's archivist package. And while we're not directly collaborating currently, I did take some ideas from that in addition to adding some of our own. So, thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Gabe. And again, we don't have time for questions, but I'm sure you can find him after the session.